Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. This to me is one of the most significant and one of the most forgotten days of the year. The title of the show today, April 19th, Patriots Day, the day they wanted to erase. And you can put whoever you want in terms of a they being the government, they being the left, they being, you know, education, they being the media, they being, I don't know who they are, but whoever it is, this is probably, I don't know, more or less significant than July 4th. I'm not really sure. I would say July 4th simply because the Declaration of Independence is one of the most significant documents ever written in the world, not just for us. But what's so fascinating about Patriots Day, this is the day that started the War for Independence, which people call a lot of times the Revolutionary War. Well, no, the Revolution was American liberty, was the founding documents, were the principles that were created here. That was the Revolution. What started on April 19th was the War for Independence. Okay, so the reason we had the reason the country was created was a revolution in thought, in liberty, in freedom, in ideas that really had never been tried in the world. You know, the founding fathers wanted to try here and gave their lives there. Now my mind's going blank. This is my Friday morning, so I know you guys are wide awake. It's Monday, but me, it's still the end of the week. Lives, their fortunes, their sacred honor. There we go. To this great cause. And then you get these folks saying, well, gee, there were still slaves and not everybody was as equal as everybody else and yada, yada. Okay, well, fine. You know, this is an evolutionary process. It didn't happen all in one day. These folks were pledging, you know, freedom at a time when most of the rest of the world were under dictatorship monarchies. Okay, especially England, which is, you look at the people, most of the folks here were English. All right. So what fascinates me about this day so much is that it's been co-opted, taken, stolen. You don't even have Patriots Day car sales. You know, you don't, like, at least Memorial Day, you know, as bad as that has been trashed, the memory of our fallen soldiers, is that at least they call it Memorial Day something. Nobody even knows about Patriots Day. I didn't hear one mention of it on one American news. And I would think of all the networks to at least say something, that would have been the one. That would have been the one to do and say something. And they didn't. They didn't say a thing. So I'm curious about that. Anyway, Shannon Rice is on the line, our Milton City Council member. And so let's get to her. And I just have, it's kind of there's just too many issues to sort of limit ourselves to any one particular thing. So let me get her here and go. This is no fun. Ah, there it is. Thank you. Here's your report theme. She served her country in the Air Force. She swore to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And now Shannon Rice serves on the City Council of Milton, Florida. One voice, unwavering, still supporting and defending the Constitution against a wave of emergency declarations, lockdowns, and unlawful force. And all in support of the rights of her constituents and all Americans. She is Shannon Rice, and this is the Rice Report.
Good morning. Good morning, Greg.
Yeah, it helps if I unmute my mic. Here we go. So we all have our little glitches. I'm a little discombobulated this morning. Like I say, this is my Friday. And so it's been pretty crazy. So I'm ready for my weekend, which is tomorrow and Wednesday. Anyway, I got a call at 708 area code. Hang in there. I will get to you. But I want to talk to Shannon for a little bit first because we haven't chatted for a while. And so how you been? How you doing? What's going on?
Oh, things are good. It's beautiful here in Milton. We've had rain for a few days. You know that. And we're going to have a clear week. So it's just going to be beautiful. I'm looking forward to Bands on the Blackwater next week. Well,
yay. See, now I love the rain. I mean, you know, coming from California, I went through 5 years of drought before I came here. Okay. Yeah. And you wake up, it's like, oh, it's another hot, sunny, dry, clear day. Ugh. You know, and after 5 years of it, you know, it's crazy. There's just, you don't care. It's just, you know, you think, I got to get out of here. At least in San Francisco, we hit the fog. So we did have some moisture, but there were folks inland. And this is why the fires are so bad. People don't realize this. After 5 years of drought, there's no moisture anywhere. You know, whatever there was, you know, in the top, you know, 50 feet of ground is gone. It's way down there. And so, and that's one of the problems with the redwoods is they don't have the deepest roots in the world. So there's no water for them, you know, and it gets crazy. But yeah, so the rain here, now here it's hysterical because the soil is basically sand. It's like this red sandy clay stuff. And it's like a sponge for water. So as much rain as we get, it just goes right into the ground. You know, well, yes, we get floods, but it's so nice to see that that nature, you know, when God created everything here, that put at least, you know, soil that absorbs water in a place that gets a whole lot of rain. So, you know, this one little coincidences I don't think is a coincidence. And you look around, I'm a big intelligent design fan. And so there's just too many things that are working right. And so I think, wow, that was pretty good. Yeah. That was good planning. So, you know, so it's just, you know, the place that has no rain.
This
gets,
for me,
you know,
I love it when I walk in the backyard. It sounds mm-hmm. like a rainforest with all the sounds of the birds. And especially after a rain, you hear the the rain dripping off the leaves. It's just beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Well, and this is interesting for folks that have never moved from where they are in the country. Get around. You know, I've lived in New England. I've lived in California. I'm now here in Florida. Three very different places. You know, you talk about, you know, New England blizzards, which thankfully you folks can keep them. I don't care. I sort of wonder why people live in cold climates. You know, I just had a friend recently move here from upper New York State. It's like, I'm out of here. You know, let's go to Florida. So speaking of which, there's a whole lot of folks coming here. Milton and Santa Rosa County, here we are, for those that are new to the show, at the end almost. We're one county away from Alabama. So Escambia County is to our west, Okaloosa County to our east, and we're Santa Rosa County here, right in the top left northwest corner of Florida. Do we have a lot of folks moving into our particular county, or are there other places in Florida, or is this people coming from all over?
We do have a lot of people moving to this area. We are, if not the fastest, we are one of the fastest growing counties right now. So there's a lot of building going on. Some people like, some people don't like. They like
so, well, actually,
a lot of people want to move to a smaller area, and it's growing.
Well, growth, you know, growth can be a good thing as long as you plan for it. So which raises the next question, zoning. Forecasts into the future, you know, the 2 year plan, 5 year plan, 10 year plan. You know, how far out is the city council, for example, looking into planning both Milton and working with the county in Santa Rosa County with the supervisors?
You know, I don't know if our plan is as far as growth plan is a 5 year plan or a 10 year plan. I haven't heard it described that way. I mean, we have. The county has a strategic plan and a comprehensive plan, but I don't know if it's specifically described as for zoning, 5 year plan or 10 year plan.
See, I don't know either. I'm not an urban planner or a civil engineer, but I'm just curious. But I talk to folks who are. You know, I just play one on the radio. But this is what these folks do. That's their job.
Yeah, some people are upset with the way the county's growing and the infrastructure status in our county. And but the city, you know, we don't really have the same stormwater issues as the county because we're more developed and we have a better stormwater system in place. We also have a there's a stormwater fee that helps us contribute to, you know, to grow funds to take care of that. Because one of the things that does happen in Florida and this area is when the rain comes down so fast, even though the soil is sandy, it will run off quickly, and that can cause problems. So we try to, in the city, there's a requirement for a certain amount of pervious surface on any lot, and the purpose of that is so that the rain can drain.
It's a great bumper sticker, drain the rain. Do you want to drain the rain?
Yeah. Small lots in this area is concerning. that's one of my concerns. I'm not a fan of the small lots in this area just because of that, because of the lack of pervious surface.
Well, here's what I've noticed, and this is something, I don't know how you regulate this or look into it or what the council is going to do, but I look at places like Baghdad and around the historic district of Milton, and not too far away, you'll have houses with a sizable amount of property around them. People are not on top of each other. You know, you've got room. You've got room to kind of spread out and do stuff. And just the fact that I guess they call it population density or whatever it is, it's not that high. And so I know that's going to raise property values, and everybody wants to divide them up and split them up. And then you look at these modern housing developments where people are like any suburban sprawly area. They're right next to each other. They've got like 5 feet between houses. You've got a 10-foot by, 8-foot front yard or some little postage stamp there. And that's the kind of thing I would avoid. I mean, when they're that close together, you know, you're going to get many more people. You're going to have more traffic. You're going to have more problems. You're going to, do a bunch of different stuff. It's like, where is enough? Where is enough people? I don't know if there are any restrictions on growth by limiting the size of property lots, for example. Now, I know that's going to drive the cost up. So we need more people. We need more commerce. We need more tax. We need more. But how much more is too much more? That's what I'm questioning. Yeah.
Different zoning districts do have requirements on lot size, but okay. That's what I was mentioning, is that it concerns me when the lots get small and the houses get big because mm-hmm. you lack the pervious surface, so there's nowhere for the rain to go.
Yep.
And, then the runoff downhill. There is a certain amount of slope, even though we're pretty flat around here.
I actually have a little bit of hill. There's some hill between me and the Blackwater River. And, I know because I was watching the water rise during Hurricane Sally. I'm thinking, okay, if it gets this far, I'm out of here. I didn't get to my line, my goal line. I had marked on the street too in my mind. So this is where the water gets to here. I'm out of here. To give me enough time to, pack up and head out. But it didn't get that far, but it did get pretty high. I was surprised how high the water got. People don't understand, I think, water in Florida. When we talk about rain, most of you folks are envisioning this light little sprinkly rain. You go outside and you're kind of dusted and misty. No, when it rains here, it's like an inch in what, 10 minutes, maybe 15?
Yeah.
Some ridiculous amounts of rain can fall in a ridiculously short time. And then you drive right out of it. It's like, wait a minute, what happened? Did it like go through a wall or something? You did. The rain could be a wall. You could be perfectly sunny and all of a sudden, boom, you're under rain. And your visibility's gone. I say, wow, this is so amazing. Everybody slows down, and you can't drive anywhere for a while. And then go a little bit further, and a mile or so later, all of a sudden you're out of it. It's like, oh, sunshine again. This is the most incredible weather here. It's amazing.
Well, yeah, and as just mentioning stormwater infrastructure, it's uh-huh. not really the best thing just to channel that stormwater to the Blackwater River. It's best if it can seep down through the soil.
Yeah.
Natural
irrigation.
As development happens, and some people want a smaller lot, we'll just have to deal with it.
Yeah, I know, it's going to be interesting. Well, like I say, when Action Radio has a million listeners and I want to get myself a nice place with lots of property and several big dogs, when the liberals discovered, where I am, it's like, okay, I'll talk to you. I'll say, who's your real estate friend? We'll chat. Anyway, we've got a southern border that is not a border anymore, as we know. And so I think we should start to feature, the illegal alien update as part of our report here, because it's something you guys are going to have to deal with. You've got, I don't know if the Biden illegal alien bus caravan parade has hit our area yet, but talking to Josie, at times she's telling me, Miami, I think places more sympathetic to illegal aliens are taking busloads of people. Have you seen a problem here? Have you seen an increase in demands for tax money, services, anything like that? And what are the checks, in place to make sure we're not funding illegal aliens here, despite what the insurrectionist in the White House says?
I don't know that would be a city issue for us.
Okay.
If it becomes a problem in this area, or if it becomes a demand in this area, then I think it's going to be county. Mm. So it's not anything that we've discussed at the city.
Yeah. Yeah, I should probably find a county person. Yeah, I should probably find a county person that wants to, join the show here and periodically and tell us what's going on. Because a lot of these things are county, and so I understand that. All right, I want to totally switch over here. We've got about 15 minutes left before Dr. Pry gets here. Patriots Day. You serve in the military. You're a patriot. Our war for independence started on this day. Longfellow wrote the poem, let me tell you about listen, my children, and you shall hear the midnight ride to Paul Revere, which rhymed really nicely. I don't know how you work William Dawes into that either. Listen, my children, and take a pause of the midnight ride of William Dawes. It doesn't have the same ring to it, if you know what I mean. So anyway, but this is where it all started. And I grew up in Lexington. I went to high school there. And they've completely lost their way. The greatest gun grabbers and gun controllers in the country, some of which are in Massachusetts, the very place that was the most patriotic and most fervently anti-British, during colonial times. So it just seems to me that this holiday, this wonderful holiday that should be sacred, to all patriotic Americans, is being systematically erased from our memory. I haven't heard a news broadcast on this. I haven't heard, there's been no proclamations from the city council, for example, celebrating Patriots Day. Maybe you want to do some of the first bands of the Blackwater thing. I just want to let Patriots Day happened or something. It just seems to me, and I think part of the reason for that is it was started over gun confiscation. The very thing that everybody's worried about, happening, which is happening, depending on little segments of the population here and there are losing their guns, like red flag laws, things like that. It's getting worse, but it's just fascinating to me that this one holiday that is like number two after July 4th, very close second, by the way, is just completely erased from our collective memories these days. What do you think? Just to throw it in your court.
yeah, I do this all the time. Think there's only like two states up in the Northeast that make it a holiday at this point. It's not a holiday like a work holiday or anything in most of the states at this point.
Well, it doesn't have to be a holiday, but it should be a day of recognition. I don't believe in giving people time off unless they're going to go to the shooting range and celebrate that way. This should be, that'd be a great thing. City Council of the shooting range. We're gonna celebrate our independence by, going shooting. The whole city council should meet out at the range and say, hey, we're gonna exercise the right that started our war for independence. I mean, something, maybe for next year, start planning it now. But there needs to be some recognition of this day. And Lexington used to. I don't even know what they do now. They probably have like a socialist teach-in or something, but when I was in high school back in the 70s, I used to get up at 3 a.m. and go to the old belfry so I could hear the bell ring. In fact, we actually rang the bell. We rang the old belfry, right? And if I remember rightly. Anyway, I know we were up there. And so the bell rang that it was to get the Minutemen to the Buckman Tavern so they get nice and drunk before the British arrived. I'm embellishing history a little bit here, folks, but they did. And we had reenactors, and we had British literally marching up, and we had Paul Revere literally riding through the town. You hear the clopping of the hooves, the shoes on the pavement. There he goes, right? Okay. Yeah. Sound effects. I can get goofy. But there was a real reenactment, and kids used to gather. And the biggest one of all was 1976, our bicentennial. Okay. Gerald Ford came to town. I know, he almost shook my hand. And I say almost because he took one look at me and turned and went to another part of the crowd. He looked me right in the eye. Gerald Ford looked me square in the eye. I'm 16 years old. and he walks away. Thanks, Ford.
I wonder why?
I don't know. I just reached my hand up. Maybe I had that look on my face of unbridled enthusiasm of a kid, about to shake the hand of a president. And he just turned away and went to another part of the crowd. So, that's my memory of Gerry Ford. But the point is we celebrated it. We did something, especially the bicentennial. But it wasn't really emphasized that this was about gun confiscation, that the British were, and I'm going to talk about this more in the second hour, the British came to Lexington and Concord to arrest John Hancock and Sam Adams and confiscate all the guns that were used to shoot them all the way back to Boston after Lexington. So Lexington was like the Alamo. It was the delaying tactic. So as this was going on, the horses were riding around like crazy, and the rest of the men blah. Slow down, Greg. Minutemen gathering at the old North Bridge in Concord. So I know this history. I was there. I lived it. you know. And so, but this is forgotten. I don't even know if they do. I should look up and see if they actually do these reenactments anymore. But we've lost. If you lose your origins, if you lose the reasons that your country comes into existence, if you don't study your founding documents, how the hell are you going to pass that on to the next generation? That's my problem.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't know what they teach in school today. I mean, I know what I was taught in school, but I don't know what they're teaching children today. I don't have a child in school, so I don't know what they're learning or not learning.
Yeah. Well, what were you taught? That's actually a really good point. What were you taught? What do you remember?
Well, it probably wasn't as in-depth as what you were taught, since you said you grew up in Lexington. But
well, this wasn't in the school.
North Carolina.
This is independent. This is independent historical reenactors. We're teaching us this. This is not done, this is not part of the school program at all.
Okay. So, well, I don't recall any reenactments when I was growing up, but I grew up in North Carolina, and we had North Carolina state history.
Okay.
And so I don't know if what they get nowadays in school. it seems that I don't know if they read the Constitution. I don't recall if it seems like we read the Constitution in school, but maybe not. Maybe that was something I did on my own. I don't know.
Well, I bet you read the preamble.
Maybe we can all be more involved and find out what kids are learning in school today, and we're all paying for it. So.
Well, yeah, and I don't know if that's a county or a city question, but I would definitely have some, you know, especially in this area where we have so many, you know, active duty military. We got people from around the country coming here, and we've got veterans, and we've got people. We've got, you know, I went from socialist California to patriotic Florida, so it'd be interesting to see what's in the schools. But if I imagine, as one of the school committee members I actually met and interviewed, if he's an indication, then they're a bunch of socialists too, you know, even in this patriotic area. Of course, I'm not mentioning names. I could.
Well, I mean, maybe that's why some people are opting for private school or a charter school nowadays.
Yeah.
I would think that's probably questions that parents are asking, and, you know, about the areas that concern them the most. You know, we have some Christian private schools here, and I understand why people are choosing that over public schools. So, you know, because it meets what they're looking for. So,
well, you know, my idea was to abolish all public schools. I want to get rid of them. I mean, when they were all locked down, I said, great, stay locked down, go away, sell the buildings, you know, break up the union, and have everybody go to a private school. That was my idea. Oops,
yeah,
stepped on that one.
I don't really keep up with what's going on with schools enough. Probably. I mean, you know, we do have a school board, but that's just not an area that I've focused on. But again, I'm sure that's just because I don't have children in it. So.
Does the school board report to either the county supervisors or the city council of Milton?
No.
Do they give a report to you so you know what's going on?
I haven't seen a report.
Okay, so you know where I'm going to go next, right? here's your slow-hanging curveball. You know, get a report from the school committee. You know, get a report from the whatever. This, yeah, exactly. Someone from the school committee should probably once every, I don't know, 2 months, 3 months, whatever you guys decide, you know, come to the city council and report on curriculum, on changes on, you know, here's one for you. How many illegal aliens are currently in the school system? They know. They're not telling you, but they know. I think that's a figure. What's that?
It would be their choice. You know, they're all elected. The school superintendent is elected. The school board is elected.
Okay.
And we wouldn't have any say.
Then make it a public request. Say we would really – and make it a public invitation. We invite the school board to come to us and report on the following issues. You know, the amount of illegal aliens in school, the extent to which you educate on the founding documents. I just think about, you know, four or five things and just say, hey, you know, we're just checking in, you know, just a friendly little chat. Here's my guess. Here's my guess of what you were taught in school. The Constitution of the United States. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. That's probably the extent of your constitutional education in school. You were taught that. You were taught to memorize it. You recited it, promptly forgot it, and here we are. Does that sound about right?
I'm not sure. Maybe, maybe not. It seems like you were taught a little more. I mean, how did I know so much about it? And I actually, nowadays, I carry a pocket constitution in my purse. Sometimes two, because I give one away.
That's what an adult patriot would do. But I can't tell you what I learned in my childhood from school and from my own research, because I did a ton of research on my own. I was always reading things. You know, I found my own education far more interesting than the one I was being provided, except certain times. There were certain teachers and professors that were brilliant, and they made going to school worthwhile. I think there were like five the entire time. You know, from by the time I graduated college, it was probably like, you know, five, maybe six or seven. I'll say seven. I'll be generous. You know, people that actually made it worthwhile going to school, which could have been condensed easily into 2 years. You know, but that, so that we spent a lot of time in school doing a lot of nothing, and you've got to search out the really valuable people. I did that in college. I took courses in college. I took a philosophy course just because the professor was brilliant. I didn't know anything about philosophy. I can't remember to this day what we talked about. I'm sure it influences, you know, what I do, because a lot of this is based on, you know, philosophy. So it's there, but that's the real part of education. But yeah, constitutional education, that's something that should definitely be looked into, because we are forgetting. And we are forgetting this day.
Well, I recently heard DeSantis was speaking about civics being taught in school, focus on civics. Not that, I mean, it's probably being taught now, but there was something he was talking about with the focus on that, more of it, or something along those lines.
Something to look into. Yeah, he'd be good for that. Well, he's, you know, when do you think he's going to declare for president? Should we take bets? Should we start a pool?
I don't know. I saw photos that he was having dinner with, there was a big celebration at Mar-a-Lago.
Mar-a-Lago, and, I think, yeah.
And, so he was down there, and there was a group of people, and I saw comments about that he would be running. So
everybody goes before Trump first and says, I want to run for president. What do you think? Are you running? Because if you don't run, I'm going to run. Tell us, Mr. Trump. Please. Yeah. Well, actually, there's something fascinating going on in this country. We only got a couple minutes left, and I want to get to it. There was the Health and Freedom Conference in Tulsa, which I really wish I could have been at, for reasons that A, I didn't know about it, B, I wasn't invited, and C, I don't have the travel funds right now anyway. But there was something fascinating that happened there. It was a conference. There were no masks. You had Mike Lindell. You had General Flynn. I think Sidney Powell spoke, although I haven't seen her speech yet. I've seen the other two. Mike Lindell's brilliant. He's so funny too. He's like, he's doing an infomercial. He switched, you know, my country for my pillow. It's basically the same thing. But it's fascinating what's going on. The election audits, I'll have a huge election correction report this Wednesday. Arizona, we're waiting for that to be the first state to reverse their fraudulent election count for Biden and declare for Trump. That's going to be fascinating. There's this huge groundswell of things that nobody knows about. And it reminds me of what Dr. Peter Pry told us about with committees of correspondence. In other words, this kind of like shadow government, these secret, you know, meetings and things that were held so the British wouldn't, you know, take them out and hang them, which the British did, by the way. And so this is undercurrent, you know, despite the fact that the communists are in charge now, but they stole the election, and you can't remain. We can't make crime pay. We can't allow this to go forward indefinitely because, you know, we've got problems. We do not have a country. We do not have a legal government right now. But the groundswell of things that are happening around this are fascinating. I don't know if you've caught wind of some of the stuff going on, but what do you think? You see some interesting things in our future, as I do?
Well, I hope. I hope some things happening. I mean, you know, as far as groups going underground to meet and stuff, of course that's going to happen. that's why it shouldn't squelch, you know, freedom of speech and things. Because you
this was underground.
Well,
the Tulsa meeting wasn't underground. It was a conference held by thousands of people attended this conference. I just don't think it's being reported. And I know it was reported on One American News, but I don't know if anybody else covered it. You know, so, but that doesn't mean it's not happening. It doesn't mean that, you know, thousands of people across the country aren't, and probably, you know, hundreds of thousands or several million, you know, tuned in. Well, I think 150 million people have seen Mike Lindell's, you know, documentary, Absolute Proof. Well, that's half the country. And half, you know, and more than half the country believes that there was a fraud in the office. So it's, I think it's fascinating. I am encouraged by all this.
Yeah,
so
I think it's good.
So
I think
we shall see.
I think it's American.
Very American. We're Americans, damn it. Yeah. Anyway, so go out and celebrate April 19th. Go out and celebrate Patriots Day by being a patriot. And let's see if we can. Do you think it might be possible to have some kind of recognition of Patriots Day next year here in Milton? You can put that on your calendar for something to do. I think it'd be a good idea.
I will make a note about it and see if there's interest amongst the council and amongst the. I'll start talking about it. That's for sure.
I'll shame them into it. Do it the old-fashioned way. Say, wait a minute, it's Patriots Day. Are you a patriot or not? You know, but it is. In fact, I didn't talk to Dr. Pry about this a little bit. I know he's got three fascinating articles he sent me this week, all of which are very different. We can get onto those, but a lot of things. These are the interesting times that the Chinese curse warned us about. Maybe it's a little too interesting. Anyway, on that note,
y'all have a good day. I heard you said Dr. Pry is on the line.
Yeah, but I just want to see any closing thoughts before we move on.
No, just a beautiful day here in Milton. Have a good day.
Sounds good. That's why we're here. Thank you, Shannon.
Thank you.
There we go.
Bye.
Bye now. Shannon Rice, Milton City Council, with my parting words to hopefully get a celebration of Patriots Day next year. All right, back with Dr. Pry, just a bit. What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Oh, do we have some fun stuff today? We've got blackout wars, UFOs, and microchips from our Pentagon. Good morning, sir. Where would you like to go? Should we cover them all?
Well,
this would be great.
I'd like to start off with another issue that that broke, an article I didn't have a chance to send to you that overshadows all these other issues.
Okay.
It may be a beautiful day in Milton, but it's a rainy day here in Virginia, and I think for the United States, because the Biden administration basically has lost its first great confrontation with Russia and China. People who have been following the news may have noticed that, Russia mobilized 85,000 troops on the border of Ukraine, and we've been extremely concerned about a possible invasion of Ukraine. At the same time, you know, China has been threatening to attack Taiwan, sending armadas of aircraft in the direction of Taiwan and conducting quote-unquote exercises that are extremely threatening to Taiwan. And just recently, a person little known to us, but your counterpart in Russia, a person named Margarita Simonyan, went on TV. She's basically the director of Russia's state-run international media giants, RT and Sputnik. And she made an appearance on TV to do an interview, and she made the following statements. Russia will invade Ukraine, sparking a conflict with the U.S. that will force entire cities into blackouts. All-out cyber warfare, nationwide forced blackouts, she describes as a fated war to come against the U.S. Here are some other highlights from the Simonian interview that was on TV recently. In conventional war, we could defeat Ukraine in 2 days, but it will be another kind of war. We'll do it, and then the U.S. will respond by turning off power to a major Russian city like Voronezh. Russia needs to be ready for this war, which is unavoidable, and of course it will start in Ukraine. Russia is invincible where conventional war is concerned, but forget about conventional war. It will be a war of infrastructures, and here we have many vulnerabilities. I've been agitating and even demanding that we take Donbass, eastern Ukraine. We need to patch up our vulnerabilities as fast as we can, and then we can do whatever we want. We only lose if we do nothing, agreed Russian TV interviewer Vladimir Soloviev. He argued that by absorbing parts of Ukraine or the entire country, Russia would be able to remove the zone of American influence further from its borders. And then she goes on to say, to defeat the United States, according to Russia's Simonian, we don't even need the nukes. And I'm not saying it's in response to this, but basically the Biden administration last week, you know, had sent U.S. ships into the Black Sea over Russian diplomatic protests during this rising crisis. And then they mobilized, in addition to basically the 85,000 troops, they mobilized additional forces, two armies on the border of Ukraine. And we pulled out the ships. We pulled the ships out of the Black Sea. We never should have sent them in there in the first place. Mm-hmm. And Biden has caved to agreeing to negotiations or a meeting with Putin on his terms. And so this is basically the Biden administration has met its first test with Russia and China, and basically caved. And really have little alternative considering the aggressive nature, you know, of some of our actions, which were highly imprudent. You know, there's no way that we would be able to win a war with Russia and Ukraine. There's no way we can challenge Russian military power by going into the Black Sea. Every war game we've played against China and Taiwan, we've lost, except a recent one that I talked about last week, where the Biden administration did win a war game against China that postulated we were using military technologies 30 years in the future, many of which are not even, which we don't have and aren't, and we don't even plan to buy them. But it made a nice headline that under the Biden administration, they finally managed to win a one war game against China. But when you unpackage the details, you know, it actually underscores our weakness. Even in that Biden war game, by the way, the Chinese still ended up with a toehold on Taiwan. So that's where we are today on this rainy Monday morning in Virginia with, you know, kind of everybody's worst fears coming true over the Ukrainian crisis. In a sense, we might be able to breathe a hot sigh of relief because I think this means that Russia isn't going to invade and take over Ukraine. That they threaten to do it. From my point of view, of course, I've been telling everybody about this concept of blackout wars, of attacking electric grids, and that this is the future of warfare, this new way of warfare. And that's exactly what, you know, the Kremlin's mouthpiece described from those quotes that I read earlier about nationwide blackouts occurring as a consequence. I would also add that the Simonian, I would dissent, or one thing I think that was untrue in the Simonian interview, where she characterized Russia as having significant vulnerabilities, you know, when it comes to cyber warfare, and that they had to patch those up, actually isn't true. You know, the Russians hardened their electric grid against EMP, and these protections that they have placed onto their electric grid and other critical infrastructures also makes it pretty much invulnerable to cyber warfare, you know, because what they did is they kept retro technologies in their grid, things like electromechanical controls, all right, that are much less vulnerable to EMP and are completely invulnerable to cyber because they have no cyber connection, no internet connection, so you can get in and manipulate them. They're electromechanical. Likewise, they have, deliberately retained vacuum tube type technologies in their electric grid. You know, vacuum tube electronics are over a million times less vulnerable to EMP than our modern microelectronics. That's not because Russia's backward, but it's because back in the Cold War, they mm-hmm. thought there was going to be a nuclear war, and they wanted to be the one to win it, and they wanted their electric grid to stay up and other critical infrastructures to not go down in the event of such a conflict. And so that's why they're the world's leading manufacturer of vacuum tube type electronics. They also have the microelectronics, the modern microelectronics, that are comparable to what we have as well, but they only use them selectively and have backup systems in their high-tech microelectronic systems that are vacuum tube or based on retro technologies, so they're not completely dependent upon the extremely vulnerable electronics as is our military and our critical infrastructures. But I just wanted to kick it off today before we started talking about alien civilizations again and microchips implanted in the head by Dr. Fauci.
This is fascinating.
Which was one of the things I sent you.
Oh, gosh. That's the big
bad news for this morning. We all knew that Biden administration would be tested, and they have been tested and have been found wanting.
Well, we knew that. I mean, and I still can't bring myself to say Biden administration. To me, it's the insurrection. And this is what happens when you let morons steal your country. You know, you've got an idiot there. You've got the people behind him. I still think it's Obama and various other folks. This is like Obama's third term. But it seems like the left still has this problem of government by wishful thinking. In other words, they send ships in because we're big and bad and powerful, and everybody has that same perception of us. Well, they don't. You know, the idea of some of the other things you're talking about, you know, wishful thinking that, we can win a war game as long as we project into the future things we don't have. But if we did, it'd be okay. You know, global warming. You know, and it seems to me government by wishful thinking. Well, if we just cure the climate crisis, everything's going to be great. You know, they're delusional. They are very, very strange in what they do. Go ahead. Yeah.
There's a psychological term for it called magical thinking, and which is basically the same thing as wishful thinking. That you imagine, you actually convince yourself that you're some fantasy that you have is mm-hmm. reality. And then you act according to that. And another thing that's really just deeply disturbing about this, too, is I also think that this really proves that, you know, the one institution that seemed to be left in our society that was competent, that we could count on, mm-hmm. and that most Americans respect the most, you know, is the military. And, I think that this proves that we're finally paying a price in competency among our military leadership, too, that we have paid a price for having all these political generals. You know, that's another thing I blame Trump for, okay? Apologies, Jody. But, you know, he should have brought back, you know, Obama let go hundreds of generals who were politically incorrect. They got fired. They were forced into retirement. That even happened under Trump to some extent, you know. There was a general, one of our, and I considered him to be one of our best generals, a guy named General Stephen Quast, mm-hmm. visionary guy, you know, really understood the EMP and cyber threats and backed Trump on not having the U.S. Space Force subordinate to the Air Force. He's an Air Force general. And he realized, he said, you know, part of the reason we haven't exploited space and gotten the most out of it is because we've been trusting the Air Force to use it. You know, when the Air Force people are focused on bombers and airplanes, and they see space, we've talked about this before on your show too, mm-hmm. they see space forces as not an independent thing, but it's there to service the warfighting capabilities of the Air Force. And that's not a way of growing your capabilities in space. That's why the Space Force needed to be independent. And That's why Trump wanted the Space Force to be independent, and he was right to want that, but that's not what he got. You know, Congress and the Air Force, basically we've got a Space Force that's got a relationship to the Air Force that's similar to the Marines, to the Navy, you know, where basically the Space Force is really still subordinate to the Air Force. And General Quast got fired by the Secretary of the Air Force, and Trump didn't do anything to stop that. You know, so even under his administration, you know, we lost our best people. You can't do that. You know, there aren't that many people in any organization. I think the great sociologist W.E.B. Du Bois, you know, back during at the turn of the last century, had this talented tent theory, you know, and he said that in, you know, his theory, and I think it's true, that in any organization, you basically got 10% of the people who do 90% of the work. You know, 10% of your people are your best, most talented people who really determine whether your institution is going to be successful or failure. And, you know, you just can't keep firing your talented tent and expect your institution to remain healthy and competent. And I think we've unfortunately reached that tipping point between Obama, mainly Obama's fault. But I wish Trump had brought back all, I mean, you know, everybody who got fired by Obama should have been brought back by the Trump administration. You know, it was another terrible missed opportunity. You know, because Obama was the perfect.
You know,
pardon?
He didn't have a plan. You know, he came into office without a really specific plan. I mean, he should have. This is why I say people, you just don't walk into the presidency. It's one thing I was worried about. This is why I was a Ted Cruz supporter, because at least he knew government and he knew the Constitution. And I think would have made a better president overall. That's why I supported him until he lost the nomination. That's when I became a Trump supporter, because I couldn't stand the idea of anybody else, you know, on the Democrat side. But the problem with Trump was he didn't manage his people. He didn't listen to the right people. He got so caught up in COVID when he should have said, we're just going to let this run its course. I'm still convinced Peter Navarro and a couple of other folks were the ones that Trump said, we should just let it, you know, just like I said, you should let it run its course, and this will be over with in about 10 weeks, which it would have been if we hadn't had the Dr. Fascist, you know, vaccine marketing campaign. And someday, if you have a chance, I'll tell you about my theory about why the vaccine came first and the virus was tailored to the vaccine, you know, in a huge marketing campaign that's still going on. It involves the lockdowns, the masks, and everything else, and the removal of our freedom. Dr. Fascist recently came out on a TV show, I think last weekend, saying, well, you know, public health concerns are more important than your constitutional rights. Well, up yours, you know, butt face. No.
Right.
That's
right.
Not how this country works at all. Yet that's the perception. And he's capitalizing on that because he's basically a cheap, you know, used car vaccine salesman. That's his job. And everything else is subordinate to that and includes getting rid of our rights. Because if we have our rights, you know, we have our freedoms. If we have our freedoms, we don't have a lockdown. If we don't have a lockdown, there's no fear. And without fear, there's no need for vaccines. Everything comes back to vaccines, which I find fascinating.
No, I agree with you completely. And I'm always, we are so like-minded, because I had the same. You know, in terms of, I was also a Cruz supporter, and, you know, until Trump won the nomination. And of course, you know, there was no alternative, and I did admire him. And I thought he was going to be a lot better than he turned out to be as a president, you know, because of his aggressive courage, his tremendous courage and leadership on fighting political correctness, you know, and, you know, he certainly mobilized the kind of public support he had. And that's the great tragedy, because he really could have done anything. You know, he had so much political power behind him. He could have abolished the FBI. He could have gotten rid of the CIA. He could have gotten rid of the IRS. Cruz wanted to end the income tax. I mean, that would have been – that's the kind of thing you need to do to save the Constitutional Republic in the long run. You know, the concept of an income tax was unconstitutional until the Progressive Era, you know, and it should have been, because the founders knew that once you gave the government access to people's wallets, it would grow endlessly and end up consuming not only in our wealth, but our freedom as well, and that's exactly what's happening. But he took that power and he didn't engage in, you know, visionary, real, because he didn't understand the fundamentals. But anyway, I don't want to disappoint. I don't want to end up spending a half hour beating up on Trump. But
listen, I do it enough.
Especially since the problems that we are, since he inherited problems from Obama, and the recent thing we were talking about, which is this new defeat, you know, where where the bad guys have taken Biden's measure in the first test and found him wanting. Now we have to worry about, after this, will they make a calculation that this is the time to strike, or will they wait for us to fall further because we're doing such a great job destroying ourselves?
I don't think, well,
you know,
in a strike,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's like a, who wins a fight? Well, nobody. It's just a question of who loses less. All right. So if you go to war, there's a huge expenditure of resources, people, you know, the losses are of orders of magnitude nobody really knows about. So if you have the choice to do, as Sun Tzu said, you know, win without fighting, go for it. You know, Biden's already been bought. Everybody knows that China owns Biden. He won't be allowed to win. Even if he had the sense to actually want to win and put America first, you know, economically, he can't do it. He's already bought and paid for it. You know, his boss, you know, the ring he kisses is Xi Jinping's. You know, there's nothing. He can't win. He couldn't have won in Alaska because that would have pissed off his overlords. He certainly couldn't win, you know, in any of these battles. He won't win anywhere because he's not going to be allowed to, because he doesn't work for us. I don't think people understand that. He is not an American president. He's a thief in chief who got his office given to him by the most massive fraud in world history, and he owes his allegiance to the globalists, to the Chinese and the Russians and everybody else that owns him and his family business. And if you don't understand that,
well,
you don't understand what's going on.
I agree with you that, I mean, you can make a good case. And I have made that case myself,
okay.
You know, that Russia and China may well follow, you know, the Sun Tzu principle. The best victory is to win without war.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the correlation of forces and how we are really destroying ourselves, you know, including our freedom, eliminating, because that's the thing they have always feared about us most, that we're a free society.
Mm-hmm.
And if we wrote, and we are raising the flag of tyranny over our country with our own hands. So, you know, why go to the expense and risk when there's a looking like an excellent possibility, maybe even right now from it might even look inevitable, you know, that we are basically over as a constitutional republic and going to join the rank of authoritarian countries. We're just going through that phase of soft tyranny first before we, and that would eliminate their chief reason, you know, for wanting to destroy the United States. However, you know, in history, you know, do not underestimate the greed and, you know, the national security states, totalitarian systems, eventually they end up going to war with each other, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they don't believe in coexistence. They don't even believe in peace. They don't do well in peace. They need a war. They need a threat in order to keep their own people under the heel. And if you look at all politics is local, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that I think applies to nations as well. Putin has got to be thinking about, you know, when he seized Crimea, annexed Crimea, he had never been more popular. I mean, that's one of the things he did to Russia at the time, and it continues to suffer, you know, dire economic problems, not just because of the sanctions, but because kleptocracies are not free market systems, you know, and they have problems just like socialism does. You know, and so it doesn't do a good job of creating wealth and distributing wealth. And, you know, Russia, which by the way was, I mean, you know, the elites of, it goes back to Viking roots, you know, they've always been a predator kind of a state, you know, that has a history of compensating for internal problems that it can't solve because it never became a true but dynamic free market, free system of any kind by expansion. And so I wouldn't underestimate the possibility that even though logically it might make sense for them to just wait until we completely self-destruct, that China and Russia, North Korea and Iran are going to attack at some point, you know, because of their own internal dynamics and just the fact that they're, and that's what they do.
Yep.
They they've spent their chief thing is to achieve victory over their enemies, you know, to wade in their blood, you know, to demonstrate. And that's the thing that they can do best, and that's how they are popular and shore up their support and justify the fact that they are totalitarian systems. So it can go the other way as well.
Yeah,
but
here's
anyway,
the weird part, though.
Not out of the. At least this one doesn't look like, in my opinion. Yeah. Now watch this. They'll invade Ukraine tomorrow and make me a liar, okay? But I think that because of Biden's backing off, you know, on all of these things, I think that they've having won round one. You know that we may be out of the woods in terms of the immediate crisis. That it hopefully won't blow up into a big war the way. Everybody was worried about that last week. Maybe they're probably still worried about that possibility and should be. But coming back to my original point, what terrible generalship. Nobody had the courage in the Pentagon. Either nobody had the courage to tell President Biden, don't challenge Russia over Ukraine. Don't send ships into the Black Sea in the middle of this crisis. That's not a good idea. Nobody had the courage to do that. That's what happens when you've got political generals. Or they were so stupid, you know, and not competent at what they do, that they thought that they could get away with that and do it as if nothing had changed, and that the Russians would just tolerate it as if they are not a rival superpower. Either way, whether it was just stupidity or cowardice or a combination of both, boy, are we in trouble when we our top leadership. And you can also, I mean, another thing that we talked about in a previous show, in terms of the lack of courage, you know, even more disappointing, you know, is how, you know, the Pentagon isn't standing up for its own troops, you know, against this political correctness, this commissar-like thing where our guys are being lectured on, subjected to critical race theory, and you know, being scrutinized for their political views. To see if
is
they
stand
are
down still coming?
Among the ranks of potential domestic violent extremists, you know?
Yeah.
Wow, what a lack of courage. For the Pentagon to not stand up for its own people, talk about undermining yourself. I mean, we're doing all the things that the Tsar did wrong, you know, in the Russian Revolution. You know, losing connection with your own troops, you know, your top military leadership like that. But anyway, I'll let
well,
you get
if
a
you're designing,
word in edgewise.
And we can go a little bit faster to the top of the hour, but if your design is to take down America and put us into the global order of things as a non-free country, then it makes sense. So you want to get rid of all the generals that believe in freedom and the republic and you know, defending our country at all costs and taking advantage of situations and showing power where it can be used and not being stupid enough where it can't. You know, so you weed out all the leaders and you keep the followers. It's like my inverse theory of military, you know, leadership is that you promote the followers up the chain because, you know, you advance the military by being able to follow orders. So the greatest leaders are gotten rid of all along the way. And people that are imaginative, that are creative, the people that win wars when you're in a war, that's when you advance your leaders. But in peacetime, even though this is kind of like, you know, I don't know what you'd call what we're in now, but it's like the really smart people, we used to have a colonel on, Colonel McGregor, Doug McGregor, who I met through a friend of mine, was on the show a few times. He was with Tucker Carlson a lot, always criticizing Donald Trump, and rightly so.
Good.
We should be out of here. He's been on the show a few times. You know, I don't know where he is now. I'm going to try and track him down again if I can. But, I mean, he made sense.
Brilliant, articulate guy. Brilliant, articulate guy. And you look at somebody like him and you say, how come he never made general, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's because the system is broken that somebody like that doesn't make general, you know?
Yeah. Well, he would have been perfect, and he was advising, you know, when Trump says he wants to pull the troops out, then pull the damn troops out. Don't sit around and talk about it. Do it. And that was the problem Trump had, is he had too many people around him. But getting back to the Obama theory, that your political ideology is more important than your competence. And I look at countries like Russia and China, and I've talked about this with Claire Lopez on our Thursday report. They'll take their best and their brightest. If you're going to be a Chinese diplomat and go to Alaska, you know, you're the top 0.1% of your, you know, of your diplomatic corps. You're the top. You're the best. You're the brightest. And it's all based on merit. And if you can do the job, you still have to have the ideology. You still have to serve the state and serve the Communist Party, but you're the best. Okay. Here we tend to promote friends, you know, people we know, people that have a similar, you know, ideology. Like Obama's going to appoint a bunch of, you know, basically leftist communist folks that want to subvert our country into, you know, fundamentally changing it. So that's who you're going to get. Those are the generals you're going to get. Trump had the right idea with America First, but he didn't follow through on that. So rather than having a merit chain all the way through where we look for people from the age of 5, you know, to kind of say, if you're interested in the military, or take at least recruits. And if someone has some leadership, go, you got a brain in your head. We're going to watch your career. And advance people that way, as opposed to the friends, the political connections, the ideology. We're doing it all wrong. We're getting rid of our best people. We have the best people in the world. We just don't use them. We don't put them in the right places. We don't open the opportunities and people are being kicked out now. This whole stand down, this whole purge of the military for your political beliefs. Basically, anybody who believes in America is going to be, you know, is going to be kicked out, and you're going to believe those that believe in power and whatever, you know, new order they're trying to bring in, political correctness, critical race theory, and all this other garbage. And I'll be reporting on that. I've got information I'm building now on it. You know, it's ideology over country, and that's the problem. And it's the wrong ideology, and that's what we're getting.
Right. I mentioned before we were moving through this period of soft totalitarianism, soft authoritarianism, you know, this transitional period. And at some point, you know, the way this usually works in history, you know, at some point some strong man is going to take over. And that's when you become a hard totalitarian system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, given the way history unfolds in our modern times, it may not take long, you know, before that happens. I was watching a documentary on Napoleon last night. Kind of escapism, and as I watched it, the parallels with what's happening in our own society are just striking. You know, when after the French Revolution, the directorate, which is what, after they beheaded the king and they transitioned to what they called a republic, but it wasn't really a republic; it was a totalitarian system. You know, they even redid the calendar. You know, rejected Christianity and had a new calendar that was dated from the beginning of the French Revolution, okay? And anybody that didn't believe in that was at risk of getting beheaded during the terror.
Yep, erase the history. That's the first thing to go, yeah.
Right. One of the things they did as well was they purged the army. And Napoleon was smart enough to play along with this, to pretend that he was a woke, politically correct general, you know, who believed in all the crap, you know, that the revolution was pushing. And that's how he ended up raising, you know, this, he was not even a Frenchman. He was a Corsican and started off that he didn't even speak French all that well. And the kids made fun of him. His fellow classmates made fun of him at the academies.
That
but because
familiar.
He was a woke general. And he was one of the few competent woke generals, because most of the generals who bought into the ideology, the radical views of the French Revolution weren't competent, or they were, if the ones that were competent were monarchists, and they would find that out and behead them. But so in the end, it turned he ended up rescuing something similar in Paris, happened very similar to our own situation in Washington, where the people just got fed up with it and they wanted the king back. And so there was an uprising among the masses to try to overthrow the directorate. And Napoleon was there. He was the one general, you know, who they could count on, one of the few generals they could count on, who was also competent. And that's where he gave them the famous whiff of grape. And he used the artillery, killed 200 people that were, you know, trying to storm the Tuileries, which is where the directorate was headquartered. And they were so grateful to him he was made what they called a council. They were trying to model themselves after Rome. You know, he became.
Oh yeah, I've seen that in history too. Yeah.
Right, and the Roman Republic, because they feared the possibility of a king, you know, they always had two councils. You know, so two people were in effect like their president, or two simultaneous people having that executive position at the same time. And in the French Republic, they had three. And that's where Napoleon, and it took him less than a year to get rid of the other two and establish basically his dictatorship over the French. So it took, what was that, 6 years to go from being a so-called republic that was their version of woke during the terror. And, you know, it took them 6 years. I wonder how long it'll take us for our strongman to emerge because,
well,
you know, obviously they're afraid of our masses raiding Washington, so afraid that they put up all these fences and they put in the military, as we talked about.
But they're forgetting where the war's being waged. The war's not being waged. See, just as you were saying before, it's fascinating, the parallels. The new wars are cyber attacks. They're blackouts. They're EMP. You know, it's nuclear blackmail and things like that. The next war for independence in our country is going to be fought on new social media. It's being fought right now. The Health and Freedom Conference that just took place. The audits. Arizona. We're all just I'm watching Arizona like a hawk, and I report on the election correction, you know, every week. They're getting closer and closer to getting the results of their audit, which is going to show that Trump won, and they're going to have to reverse their ballots. They're going to have to reverse their count for Biden. And once they do that, then the dominoes, you know, they're going to start falling in other places. So this is fascinating undercurrent that's going on right now. So the difference between us and, say, France a couple hundred years ago, we've got the internet. We're connected to each other in ways that that even big tech can't stop. We're still talking to each other. And there's still more than half this country knows that Biden's a fraud. They know he stole the election. Okay, I don't know how you govern a country indefinitely when half the people think you're a total fraud. Okay, so there's some, but we're not organized. You know, the military is organized because, you know, they have a chain of command. You know, the police are organized, the government's organized, the media is organized. The people are not organized yet, but we don't have to be because we're connected. And so the new phenomena that hasn't happened before in all of human history is that we actually like freedom. We've been free enough long enough, and there's enough of us around right now that understand freedom to say, wait a minute, you know, we're kind of teaching the other people. It's like when I was talking to Josie about this. It was fascinating. Illegal aliens, a certain percentage of illegal aliens come to this country not just for the benefits, but actually they actually come here for the freedom, okay, because they don't want the socialism in their own country, and they actually end up voting Republican, which is hysterical. Because you think, you know, the illegal aliens are here for the other vote, to vote for more money for themselves and to send back to their country. And most are. But there's a certain percentage that aren't. And so there's all this stuff that's never happened before. And I'm fascinated to watch it, of all the things. And in fact, I want to get on to I'll give you a few more minutes, and then I want to get on to our topic of today, Patriots Day, the day they want to erase. Because you may have a comment on this too, because this is the day when the War for Independence started. And I was talking about this with Shannon, because I used to be at the reenactments in Lexington when I was in high school. I was there for the bicentennial in 1776. I was a high school kid, and Gerry Ford was there, and he refused to shake my hand, but that's another story. But the thing was that we celebrated our independence, and, you know, those high school kids like me, now we have, you know, radio shows and various positions out there, and people are going to this, like the Health and Freedom Conference. So the crowds there, most of the country, like I say, believes he's a fraud. 75% of Republicans do. And so they're in power for now, but there's no base for it. There's no support for it. There's no legal base for it. And once it gets found out, I know your cynical side's like, you're probably shaking your head going, okay, Greg, yeah, uh-huh. But I'm watching. I'm watching very closely because events are unfolding that are fascinating that I don't think have happened before because we're so connected in ways that we haven't been before. That's what I think.
No, I am shaking my head, but I admire your optimism. I admire your optimism and hope and pray that you're right, Greg. I really do. You know,
like
in revolutionary times, though, the system doesn't work. You're counting on the system to work. And, right, we don't have a crowd like the French who are going to storm the Tuileries, all right, in terms of their throwing their physical bodies, you know. But the bad guys, you know, the Democrats, the totalitarians, aren't going to just sit back and let the system work any more than they would let Trump win re-election. You know, they've demonstrated that they're willing to do anything to hold on to power.
Mm-hmm.
And I expect the violence to come
easy
from their direction eventually.
Yeah.
And I expect, look at how bold they have been in shutting down conservative voices. You know, eventually I suspect they'll come after you and all the other
conservatives
shut them down. They're laying the political justification for it already with the whole concept of domestic violent extremists, okay? And you will be among them, and I will be among them, and our voices will be silenced. So I agree with you that the truth is on our side, the facts are on our side, but I just don't. The system is broken, and I don't think it's going to work out. You know, I can't. It's very hard to imagine these people who don't believe in the rules. They believe that they own the truth, and that they are and that we are basically the troglodytes, the people who have to be, for the sake of the country, you know, they've got to have power. They've got to exclude us from power no matter what. And gambling on the idea that the system is going to work and there's going to be to a just outcome that will peacefully, you know, restore the constitutional republic. I don't see any historical precedent for that. And thinking through the dynamics of our own times and who these people are and what they've done up to this point, I don't see that happening.
Yeah. See, I'm creating a new system. I'm not, you know, banking on the system working. It's like radio. I mean, no one's ever done action radio before. We're all pioneers here. So this is a brand new effort. I'm not so much trying to maintain the system as create a new one. And I think that's where the difference is. Mike Lindell is going to be launching his new social media YouTube combination platform, Frank Speech, in about 47 minutes. You know, so things are actually, we probably already has because it's already 9 o'clock Eastern time. So there's things that are happening, and I hope to be right at the forefront of a lot of them. And I see where our place is going to be is not now, but after, you know, what I call the big election correction, that conservatives are going to need an agenda. And they don't have one right now, and we do. And that's where I see us going. Let me get you to conclude, or we can pick up some of these issues next week. This has been fascinating, and I'm glad you're cynical because you give me something to think about, because, you know, no argument undefended is really worth much of anything. And so that's why I think it's good to have your critique of where I am. But, yeah, so
okay.
Tell me your closing thoughts.
I'll just end with this thought. On a different, completely different topic that we didn't get a chance to talk about, but I sent it to you, and you may recall our last disagreement over the characteristic of alien civilizations who may be visiting us.
What did we disagree on? I thought we agreed on that.
Well, even the director of SETI agrees with me. Okay, that's the director of the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
Right.
That we shouldn't assume that just because a civilization that may visit the Earth is high-tech, that it's benign, and warns about the possibility of malevolent civilizations out there. Last time, as I recall, we had some, maybe it wasn't a disagreement, but you seem to be of the school about, you know, welcoming them with open arms and that, as usual, looking at the bright side and the optimistic interpretation that if these UFOs that the Defense Department is talking about are real, and we are really being visited, that this is a good thing and it's you know, something to be celebrated. Well, maybe not.
No, you accuse me of being that person on the tower in the film Independence Day,
right.
You know, with my little,
right.
You know, we're here. No, that's not true. I just feel that if any civilization, any planet that's advanced enough to come here with the kind of craft that we're seeing, that the Air Force is reporting, you know, had the power to destroy us already. So I'm just looking at the evidence in terms of that. So I'm curious. Cautiously optimistic, as always, and just hoping for the best. But, you know, like I say, if they're that advanced, we're not going to be able to defend against them anyway.
Right. Exactly. You're cautiously optimistic and taking the most benign view. And, you know, sure, they had the power to destroy us already, but that doesn't mean that they aren't going to do it, or even if the simple act of us knowing about them, you know, even if they have no intentions one way or the other. But, The implications for our society can be extremely profound. I think I used the analogy of the cargo cults out in the Pacific Islands that were visited by both the Japanese and then the United States when we were doing the island hopping campaigns during World War II. We didn't care anything about the natives. We didn't need the Japanese in the United States. We didn't try to enslave them. We didn't attack them. We were interested in killing Japanese, and they were interested in killing us.
Yeah.
But the detritus, just the technologies that we left, the fact that they experienced us, ended up having some pretty catastrophic implications for the primitive cultures that it lived on those islands after we left, after the island hopping campaigns were over, that transformed them in ways that would not have happened had we not ourselves peered into their sphere, and that probably would have obviously been better off, as we all would have been if there hadn't been any World War II. But anyway,
on that note, another fascinating discussion.
Always fascinating. Always fascinating to talk to you. So thank you for having me back.
And I love talking to you for the same reason. It is a pleasure. Thank you, sir. And here we go. All right. So that's Dr. Peter Pry. And we just have these amazing visits, and I appreciate every one of them. If you go back to our shows, you know, especially during the lockdown time, you will see that there were some incredible, sometimes hour and a half we would spend just talking about everything, like the entire history of nuclear weapons and everything else. Let me take a break. I've got a caller at 646 area code. Hang on for a little bit. I'll get to you. We got some things to play, and I'll be right back.
You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Well, what a great morning this has been so far. We had Shannon Rice from the Milton City Council here in Milton, Florida, and we had Dr. Peter Pry from calling in from Virginia, up in the Washington, D.C. area, and just the expertise and just the ability to talk to some of the people that we talked to here never ceases to amaze me. The title of the show, Patriots Day, the day they want to erase. This is the day when the War for Independence started. It started in Lexington, Massachusetts, when just regular citizens, you know, you and me, grabbed a musket and stood there before British regulars, before the British Army, and said, no, we're not going to submit. No, you're not going to arrest Sam Adams and John Hancock. No, you're not going to steal all your guns. And no, we're not going to tell you where they are. And that's where it all got started. So we are a nation that got started from gun confiscation. And understanding that is critical. And taking that out of our collective memory is critical for the leftists, for the supremacists, for the New World Order, for the government collectivists, the globalists, anything you want to call them, anybody that wants to take away individual freedom, that believes more in power than freedom, those are the people that are trying to erase this day from your collective memory. And they do it with things like the Boston Marathon. They don't teach it in schools. They don't talk about it on the media. There's no celebration official of government. This is why I talked to Shannon about having a Patriots Day celebration next year. So there's all these things going on. Anyway, I got a call. And so this is a new caller. So let's bring our person on the air and see what they want to talk about. So 646 area code. Your line is now live. You're on with me, Greg. Welcome to Action Radio. Hello.
How's it going? Yeah. I just wanted to comment on what the doctor was saying. And, yeah, I totally agree with him. Like, imagine being the first ones to see an alien, and then you grab it and you fuck it. Imagine being the first.
Anyway, that was interesting. And that's a caller who will never be on the air again because they're an idiot. Okay, came on my show, swear, and tell me all this kind of stuff. That's okay. It doesn't matter. I've got your number. I always write down the numbers of the callers. That caller goes on the banned list, and they will never, ever, ever be on my show again. Why? Because they're an idiot. They had their one chance to say something actually valuable, but they didn't do it. And so that's how it goes. All right, anyway. So back to that's a new one. Okay, there we go. You know, I try and trust people. I do. I really do. I try and trust people, but no. And yeah, fortunately, we're not governed by the FCC, so you actually can swear on the show, but I don't tolerate it. All right. Let's get back to our main topic here. This kind of stuff just bothers me. So we have to remove it. If you want to call me, feel free. 215-383-3832. All right. Here's what's going on, and here's what's so fascinating about this day. Let me see if I can find my letter. Here we go. I'm not sure why people are so willing to forget this day. I'm not sure why we don't go have a celebration at the gun ranges and celebrate our independence by exercising our Second Amendment, the thing that the Minutemen died for in the Battle of Lexington and Concord. You know, when they stood before the British, you know, it was gun confiscation. And I don't know why Massachusetts has gone from the place where freedom was at its greatest, where the center of independence for the country was Boston, Massachusetts, how they've become some of the biggest gun confiscators in the country. You know, how they've lost their way. They've, you know, and this, you know, those who don't study history are destined to repeat it. Okay. Well, if you don't know where you came from, this is why the communists erase history. This is why they will take, get rid of the statues, get rid of the Confederate statues. It's like the Democrats are getting rid of the Democrat generals from the Civil War. In other words, the Confederacy. All right. Democrats are demonizing the KKK when the Democrats are the KKK. The Democrats are saying horrible things about Jim Crow laws because they were horrible, but the Democrats are the Jim Crow laws. And so they have to erase that. They have to convince you that these are the Republicans. The Republicans are the racists. Well, the Democrats are the racists. All right. The leftists are the greatest racists out there. You look at any city that's run by leftists and run by Democrats, and it's horrible. Okay. They're the racists. You've got, black Americans in the worst conditions possible in Democrat-run cities, you know, usually with black mayors and supervisors and things like that. It's fascinating that power trumps race. Power trumps race all the time. Power is the aphrodisiac. As Henry Kissinger would say, power is the ultimate aphrodisiac. Okay. So Henry Kissinger knew about power. And so black city leaders who are making life miserable for black Americans understand power better than, you know, it's not a skin color thing, folks. You know, we're not all in this together. There's no black power, black pride there. This is just simply power. And it's power over people. And so hopefully that will change. Yeah. So this is why you find Trump supporters, you know, of every race and, you know, group and age and everything else like that. All right. So I was looking around, you know, I'm exploring why things are the way they are today, why we don't talk about Patriots Day, why there is no celebration in my little town here in Milton, why Florida doesn't have, you know, a state Patriots Day something, parade, you know, anything. You know, like I said, the best way to celebrate the fact that our war for independence began with privately owned firearms. Okay, let me say that again. Our war for independence began with privately owned firearms, all right? So when the government tries to take away your AR-15, you know, the next war for independence might depend on your AR-15, okay? You know, and why does the government want to take away semi-automatic, you know, sporting rifles? Well, because those actually turn out to be, coincidentally, the best weapon against government tyranny. You know, do you need fully automatic weapons? No, because you're going to waste ammo just like the government does in wars. And you're not going to have aim shots. You're going to be indiscriminately firing, you know, rounds everywhere. And you're not responsible. You are responsible for where they go, but you can't, you know, you can't determine that. So fully automatic weapons are not a good idea. I want to rent one and just try it out just because it looks like fun. But as far as the most effective weapon for a citizen against a tyrannical government is a semi-automatic rifle. That's just the way it is. That's what's been proven. Oh, I got another call. Let me check out this one before I get to my letter. So things, we're having a busy morning. We're getting more and more callers, by the way, which is really cool. I'm excited. But just to let you know, yes, I do have everybody's number that ever called. It's a big file, and I appreciate it. Let's see. This one's a new one. Let me just check the band list again here. And I have to have another caller to my band callers. Nope, looks good. All right, so let me bring on this person here. We do have a producer, by the way, who will be starting very soon, who will be doing all this for me, you know, and with me, so that I don't have to do it myself. But 217 area code. Yeah. Okay, well, that was fun. What am I getting all the insane? Another band caller. Okay, all right, who got the word out? So Dr. Pryor was asking, you know, when are we going to get, when are the leftists going to start, you know, terrorizing my show? Well, I think it's pretty much started, okay? So just to let you know, we're now big enough to be, that's two callers I got to put on the band list. Interesting, okay. You know, you don't only get one shot at this. If you call from different numbers, well, just, all right. Okay, I think I sent a phone call for today that I don't recognize. Let me get back to my article. Because I found this quite fascinating. This is something, it's from, it was updated January 12th, 2019, posted January 26th, 2013. So this would have been during the Obama oppression that we were under. It says, attempted gun confiscation triggered American Revolution. This is a letter to the editor. And let's see if I can find which place they sent it to. Looks like Sun News Readers. And he says, so, you know, this is Sun, Cleveland.com. So there you go. So this is a Cleveland website. He says, to Sun News Readers, this is, I guess, the Cleveland Sun. That would make sense. He says, I am dismayed. Is it he? I shouldn't assume that. Well, let's say it'll be another letter. See if it's signed. Let me scroll down a little bit. Yeah, it looks like he. Giza John Vamos. I guess that would in Cleveland. All right. So Giza John Vamos, thank you very much. He says, I'm dismayed by what I've been reading, hearing, and seeing on the Second Amendment. People calling for curbs on the Second Amendment. These people seem to forget the Second Amendment protects the freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, and freedom of assembly. The Founding Fathers realized an armed citizenry is essential to keep a tyrannical government at bay. That's why they want to steal your guns, folks. Okay. You know, this is the canary in the coal mine. All right. He says, if you want curbs on the Second Amendment, then prepare yourselves for curbs on freedoms that you are taking for granted now. Expect curbs on your freedom of speech, press, religion, and assembly. I want to stop right there because that's exactly what we had under COVID. All right. COVID was not a virus. COVID was an oppression. All right. So the government used COVID as an excuse. And the media use it as an excuse. In fact, everybody used it as an excuse to cut back on our freedom of speech, press, religion, and assembly. Don't you find that interesting? I do. Okay. Finally, I got a call I recognize. I think we're done with the obscene folks here. Anyway, so expect curbs on your freedom of speech, press, religion, and assembly. Just do not give up rights and freedoms in the hope of trying to eliminate violence. The bad guys do not play by the rules anyway. Why limit the rights of the good guys to protect themselves? Yeah, as I've said before, you cannot solve crime by disarming the victims. It doesn't work that way. Going on... So there was a caller I recognized. He dropped too. Maybe there's phone problems today. Oh, he's back. All right, good. Let me get Pianchi on the line here. And so, hey, Pianchi, we've made it to the level of trolls discovering us. Two obscene phone calls in a row.
Well, you know, sometimes birds fly away. But I tried to get in and ask Peter a comment about the recent remark that was made by Biden's ambassador to the UN, Linda Greenfield.
Yes. Yes. And oh, did you see my comment on Facebook? American. I think you posted my comment on Facebook.
Yeah, I did. She's
asking. Because I can't.
And she made the comment.
Yeah, go ahead.
And she was on, of all places, an Al Sharpton's National Action Network.
Hmm.
And she made the comment that slavery weaved white supremacy into our founding documents and principles.
Right, and that's why I asked the question, can you show me any place in our founding documents where the word white appears?
Well, I don't know where these people get these notions from. And
I do.
You know, when I was in elementary school,
mm-hmm.
and we had a black teacher, we had a black class, practically all, and we individually had to stand up in front of the class and recite Paul Revere's Ride.
Hmm.
And that was then. Now, as I think you said, it is unheard of. It just goes to show you the level that this country is starting to sink, especially when you have an ambassador make crazy statements like that.
Well, I brought
I
brought this up with Peter too. That's Dr. Peter Pry, who does our national security report. The exact same thing in a different way that people are ideologically appointed. They're not appointed on their competence. We don't have career diplomats. You know, if you're in a communist society, it's all by merit. And it's also who you know. But to a large extent, you got to prove yourself every day. And if you don't follow the line, if you don't help the Communist Party, whatever it is, or, you know, you're not going to get anywhere. Here, it seems a little different, at least in the totalitarian countries. They do support their own country because they have to, because that's where it is. So the power base of the country is the power of the country. See, here, it's based on ideology and reducing the power of the country. So it's a very different orientation. So Obama is going to weed out all the good generals, you know, all the people that, you know, are for the country and those, and keep the ones that are ideologically into fundamentally transforming the country. And part of that involves, you know, this whole critical race theory and the fact that we're a racist nation, because it's basically a substitution of Marx's class warfare and the classes are races. Okay. So instead of having, the proletariat, the bourgeois, the aristocracy, the nobility, the monarchy, you know, the old class system, we've got, you know, black, white, Asian, Native American, you know, Pacific Islander, it doesn't matter, whatever the group is, you've got, you know, the divisions are by race. I had a thought for you. Well, we should probably get back to you, an ambassador. Anyway, so she's an ideologue who hates this country, who wants to subvert us into the world order, that is using race theory to create a race war in this country, saying that we're all based on slavery. That the founding documents are based on white supremacy. This is designed to basically demonize white people for whatever these power folks want to do to the white population, you know, in terms of disempowering, I think it's a good leftist word. So there is no slavery mentioned in the founding documents. In fact, just the opposite. It talks about freedom and liberty. There is no white supremacy in our founding documents. In fact, I challenge anybody to find the word white mentioned anywhere. It ain't there. Okay, because it's not a race-based document. And yet these folks look at everything in terms of race. Their whole life is race. They can't see beyond race. So you want to talk about, so anybody that looks at everything in terms of race, to me, is a racist. That's like the purest definition of racist. So anybody that uses, so when a black person says white supremacist, that to me is a racist comment. Every bit as much as the caller here using the N-word on my show earlier, you know, that's a racist comment. So that's where I stand on the UN ambassador. Pianki?
Well, you're absolutely right. And I'm proud of the Americans, the patriots that fought against the British, by the way, which had also included blacks, it included Native Americans, and others knew the well-being and the value of what now became the United States.
Yeah.
And, you know, well, you had blacks.
One of the riders.
One
of the riders, there was Paul Revere, William Dawes, and somebody else. But one of the three people that alerted the Minutemen to the British coming was black, if I remember.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Biden should have fired this ambassador. If this was Trump,
uh-huh.
It would have been 24/7. Playing her speech, where she recited over and over and over again, and blaming him for keeping her on.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If it's American for a speech, exactly. But you see, she follows the party line. She follows the media line. Now, the conservative media played her speech, and they talked about her. I've seen it in Breitbart. I've seen it in other places. I've got an article, which I have stowed away for my upcoming show on race. But I had a really strange thought last night that there's going to come a day, you know, especially as more and more races are, and I hate the term race, I hate the whole concept of it, but as we get, you know, multiracial, interracial, we're having kids being born, you know, more and more every day that are, quote, mixed race. And eventually I see this nation, you know, almost forming its own, you know, beige race, you know, where everybody is mixed to the point where there's no discernible race classification. And it's almost like American becomes its own race. And this may take 500 years. I don't know. But there's going to come a time when you won't be able to make a racial distinction because there will be no racial distinctions because everybody will have ignored the concept to the point where it doesn't matter anymore, where we're all different. There's no discernible race in this country. And I think that would be great.
Yeah. Well, that's another day in America, but
well, it's after our time.
Hats off again to Paul Revere on his grateful ride. And one thing that is true in that poem by Longfellow is that hardly a man is now alive.
Well, yeah, exactly. This is 1800s, too. Okay, well, stick around if you want. I want to go through this, and I want to talk about some of the other things that happened on April 19th. This is one of the most violent days in history, so I told everybody, watch out. This is the day that the Warsaw Ghetto was invaded by the Nazis to round up the last of the Jews and send them to death camps. This is the day that Bill Clinton and Janet Reno murdered, you know, you want to talk about a genocide? You know, or no, it's not genocide, but a massacre. They murdered an entire religious community. Granted, they're a little kooky, but you can be that in America, all right? It's not a crime. Anyway, so they murdered all these people for what? Gun control. You know, so the Branch Davidians in Waco were basically murdered, assassinated, set on fire, bulldozed into the ground, and promptly forgotten. So that's a crime that still stands. Those people have still, well, Janet Reno's dead, but Bill Clinton isn't, and he still hasn't served, you know, still hasn't been brought to justice for that crime. This is the day that Timothy McVeigh, you know, blew up the Murrah Building, which was a incredibly stupid, asinine thing, you know, horrible thing to do, but he, the idea is he did that in protest of what happened at Waco. Well, that's a stupid way to protest, but anyway, it happened on April 19th. This day, we started the war with England on April 19th. April 19th is a fascinating day throughout history. There's some other things that have happened too. I got a whole schedule of things that have happened, but this is a day to be very careful of and to watch because stuff happens on April 19th. You there? Oh, he's listening. He's probably muted himself. All
yeah,
right.
I'm still here.
Okay, good. Just want to check.
you scared the breath out of me.
I do have my moments. All right, I'll get to that. I want to finish this one letter because this is probably the best of the like 15 articles I have at the bottom of my computer screen. So our writer goes on and says, on April 19th, 1775, some 800 British troops were dispatched to Concord, Massachusetts, to arrest Sam Adams and John Hancock and to seize a cache, that's C-A-C-H-E, a cache, sometimes pronounced a cache, but it's a cache of weapons known to be stored at Concord. When Dr. Joseph Warren sent Paul Revere to warn Pastor Jonas Clark, in whose home Adams and Hancock were staying, the Crown's troops, that'd be the British folks, for those of you who don't know, the Crown's troops were on their way to arrest the two men and seize the guns at Concord. He alerted his male, you know, congregants, about 60 to 70 men from the Church of Lexington stood armed on Lexington Green awaiting the Redcoats. Okay, those are known as regulars. So all you folks that want to understand what a well-regulated militia is, it's a militia of citizens as well-regulated as army regulars. Yeah, that's where the word comes from. All right. So if you are regulated, if you are well regulated, you're well equipped. You're armed. You've got your musket, your ball, your powder, you know, your wadding, you know, and all that kind of good stuff. And so a well regulated citizen militia today would be your, you know, AR-15, you know, several magazines, you know, whatever else essentials, knife, you know, things like that would make you a well-armed member of a citizen militia, which is necessary, by the way, to a security of a free state. Okay, you cannot have a free state without citizen militia to be a force against a tyrannical national government. That's how this all works. And this is what these folks were fighting for and died for on the Battle Green this morning, April 19th, 1775. All right, let me go on with the letter. Upon spotting the citizen militia, the British officer demanded the men throw down their arms. They refused. These were real Americans back then, all right? So you got to imagine this. There's like 60 or 70 Minutemen, you know, they're on the Lexington Battle Green, which isn't that big. It's like about half the size of a football field, all right? So they're looking at, or maybe even less than that, maybe like a third. Anyway, so here they are staring down 800 British troops with 70 guys with muskets, which only fire one shot, by the way. okay, until you reload. If you're really good, as I watched in the movie once, you can fire 3 shots a minute, okay? Well, a lot can happen in a minute, all right? So, you know, this was a suicide mission, standing down the British with 60 or 70 men versus 800 British troops, okay? And they knew it, too. But they did it anyway. That's what courage is, all right? So anyway, so back to the letter. Upon spotting the citizen militia, a British officer demanded the men throw down their arms. They refused, and the British troops immediately opened fire. I would question that. I think there was some negotiating, there was some parlaying, as they say, and I think that we just refused, because I remember a speech by Captain John Parker. All right, so John Parker was the commander of the Minutemen. And he was there on the battle green with the British commander, and I've forgotten who the British commander's name was. And he basically instructed the Minutemen, don't fire unless fire upon. But if they mean to start a war, let it begin here. And, of course, that's what happened. The British fired, and then we fired, and the war began. And so they started it. Okay. We don't know who started it. This is the famous shot heard around the world. Now, whether a British soldier in urgency, anxiety or whatever, let go around, or whether it was intentional, I don't think anybody, you know, that's history still deciding where the shot around the world came from. Did it come from the Buckman Tavern? Did it come from one of the Minutemen? Did it come from one of the British? Nobody really knows. You know, we didn't have video back then, but this is what makes it so fascinating. But a shot was fired. The war started. They fired on us. We fired on them. They won because there were 800 of them and 60 or 70 of us. And they marched out of Lexington looking for Sam Adams, John Hancock, and a whole bunch of guns. All right. The guns that we would need to fight the British. That's why they wanted to steal them. Okay. You see how this all works? Gun confiscation. Same old problem we've had before. Back to the article. Upon the spotting the system infrastructure, they refused. Okay, here we go. The British troops immediately opened fire. 8 of the Minutemen were instantly killed. The colonists returned fire in self-defense, and the shot was fired that was heard around the world, which is what I just went over. By the time the troops arrived at the Concord Bridge, just a few miles away, hundreds of colonists were waiting for them with muskets in hand, and the rest, as they say, is history. Yeah, see, that's what's so interesting about this. Now, I don't think they were muskets necessarily. I think a lot of them had Kentucky rifles. They had rifled barrels, okay? So this is a hunting rifle. So the British had the Brown Bess, which was this smoothbore musket, which had the accuracy of throwing a rock, and it was it just basically lobbed all kinds of round ball lead, you know, downrange of troops that are facing you. That's what they call, you know, toe-to-toe. In other words, you got a line of troops facing another line of troops. They shoot each other, and people fall down. It's the most insane method of warfare I've ever seen, yet that was common for the day. That's how they did it. That was sporting. That was gentlemanly. That's how gentlemen, you know, fought wars. They stood in front of each other, shot each other, and died. That, to me, is insane. At least the Minutemen had the good sense to use hunting rifles, which are far more accurate, and they'd hide behind trees and rocks, and they'd shoot the British marching in their nice little, you know, rows. You know, with their red coats, so they're easy to see, with drums and flags and the whole bit. Okay, were we sporting? No, but we were trying to seize our country back from these invaders that came from England and were making us colonies. All right, I do go on. Make no mistake about it. Back to the letter. Attempted gun confiscation ignited America's war for independence. If the federal government attempts to confiscate the guns of the American people, there would be a revolution in this country. Well, it still remains to be seen. To quote George Washington, if freedom of speech is taken away, then dumb and silent we may be led, like sheep to the slaughter. And the last line here is, wake up from your slumber, people. All our rights and freedoms are in grave danger. And that's Geza, G-E-Z-A, John Vamos from Cleveland. That's a great letter. Bianchi, you want to join me again here? I've got more.
Well, you know, the cemetery came out with a long rifle. And as the British tried to march onto New Orleans, mm-hmm. They was met with artillery fire.
And what was this now?
Get all of them, but it did impede them a little bit. So you're absolutely right. When you come down to the time when you have government trying to confiscate your weapons, mm-hmm. Well, it's time to fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know there are people that want to fight this battle now, and they want to take up arms, and I'm saying against who? You know, and I said, why? We've got a perfectly good system working right now. I know Dr. Pryor disagrees with me, but that's okay. But we've got a perfectly good system working right now of election audits. And there are election audits going on in Michigan, in Antrim County, in New Hampshire. I don't know what Pennsylvania or Georgia are doing, but they're going to have to soon. Arizona is the big one. That's the one we're all watching right now. But with the system's working. you know, and it's going to be proven soon. And I don't know, if you have a chance to check in the next 15 minutes, you want to, you know, put yourself on hold for a bit. See if Frank's speech is up. That's Mike Lindell's new website. I'd be curious if you're curious to find out. But yeah, we've got new social media platforms forming. We're going around big tech. See, Americans are clever. You know, there are more ways to fight than guns, and there's more way to fight for freedom than join the military. Although joining the military and fighting for freedom is critical, I'm dismissing that. I'm saying that it's not limited to that. Okay, I think we forget what fighting for freedom is. I think we're fighting for freedom here at Action Radio. When we write legislation that no one's ever heard of, we're fighting for freedom. So I should really get back to more legislation and talk about some of the things we're doing. But if you go to writeyourlaws.com, that's WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com, that's where our citizen legislation is. We have the top three bills are absolutely critical. The most recent one on there basically puts full product liability back on vaccine manufacturers. So they are responsible for the injuries and deaths that they cause from their products. Okay, that would be a good thing. The next bill changes Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act so that big tech cannot censor you online, like I'm being censored right now, as I am a political prisoner of Facebook. I'm not in Facebook jail. Okay, get this right, folks. I didn't do anything wrong. Okay, Facebook jail implies I committed a crime. I'm sure Facebook invented that term. Okay, but the term should be Facebook political prisoner because I'm being held captive illegally by Facebook for something I didn't do. All right, so I'm a Facebook political prisoner for the next 18 days. It's going to be a long 18 days. I have a lot of stuff to write. All right, so let me – I've got more stuff here on Massachusetts. I want to talk about this day because there's a couple of articles here that are just fascinating as to all the things that have happened on this day, April 19th. So let me take a play something for you here unless Pianki's there right on the line. But if not, let me just give myself a quick – what do I want to play for you guys? Where's my – huh, there it is. All right, I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. So don't forget Patriots Day. Don't forget April 19th. Don't forget how we started in a war. We started a war because of gun confiscation, because of gun control, because the controlling government knew that if we had guns, that we could resist them with their guns. And so there's two parts to this. One, we need to keep our Second Amendment fully in place so that we have, you know, the absolute freedom. And it is you know, all rights are absolute. Okay. So we have an absolute right and absolute freedom to own and carry guns. Okay, that's how it works. Now, again, that doesn't imply you have an absolute freedom to use them any way you want. You don't. Okay, so the responsible legal use of firearms is your responsibility to comply with laws that are just, that that say that there are reasonable uses for firearms and there are illegal uses for firearms. Okay, and so we've already done that debate. But the absolute ability to own and carry firearms is an absolute right and ability. Okay, now. That's what we fought for, that we started a war over it. Do we want to start a war for it again? I don't know. But the flip side of gun control, if the government wants to take our guns, the one thing that we seem to have lacked, and something I'll be looking into as I look into all this stuff, is the ability of us to limit their guns. In other words, the government. Okay. So here's a question that never gets asked. You know, as they seek to limit our guns, and conservatives are always on the defensive, you guys, you got to start taking the offensive. We need to start determining how many guns we want the government to have. Okay, I want you to think about that. How many guns, what kinds of guns, what kind of arms, you know, and should certain departments have them at all? Should the Department of Education have a SWAT team? I don't think so. Okay, you know, should military surplus equipment be coming down to the police forces? You know, big stuff. Okay, how much, you know, what is reasonable? Should we have what I call defense equality? In other words, no government person within their jurisdiction is armed better than a citizen or can be armed better than a citizen. All right. So at what point do we say not only is the absolute right to own and carry guns paramount, and we're going to defend it as much as necessary against a tyrannical government, but we're going to start saying to the government how many guns we think you should have. Okay, so we're going to look into that. We're going to look into government disarmament. and government gun control. In other words, how much? This is something. This is a whole new branch of things. This is what we do at Action Radio. We're the pioneers. Okay, so think about what kind of guns and how many guns that you think various branches of government should have. On that note, let me bring on Josie, Peter probably mentioned you a couple of times. I think he was disappointed you didn't call in when he went after Trump, but that's okay. You're here now. Good morning, Josie.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, good morning. I was laughing when you said you were in a political prison. I thought that was cute. That was perfect.
Well, thank you. It's true. Anybody who's limited by Facebook is a political prisoner of Facebook because they're doing it for political reasons. Cute. They're doing it for ideology. I was perfectly serious when I said it, even though you were laughing.
Yeah.
But thank you.
Yeah, I'm laughing. I'm like, that's perfect. Yeah, they're removing everybody that they want to remove.
And oh, exactly.
Very sad.
So don't say Facebook jail. Say Facebook political prisoner. See, language is everything.
People don't realize
that. If you control the language, as the left does, see, the left is a lot better at this than we are. And I try and supply language to people. I try and say freedom rifle, don't say assault weapon. I try and say political prisoner, don't say Facebook jail. You know, I try and do all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's there. But we got to get it more popular. But our listenership is way up, and I know because, well, first of all, I can see the numbers, and secondly, because we're starting to get troll callers. Did you hear our two there are folks that were like, you know, swearing on the air earlier, or did you miss that?
It was the same guy. It was the same clown calling. I could tell the same. Yeah, it was the same person with different numbers.
Well, yeah, I mean different area codes. So
yeah,
so
that's better.
Yeah, that's true.
It sounds like the same person calling.
Yeah.
So it's okay.
They go on the
They're
list.
Losers, and we know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like I say, the trolls are increasing. Well, the trolls got me kicked off Facebook for 18 more days, and the trolls are now on this show, which means we're starting to have some more impact. Remember, the most dangerous thing
that's
in the world
okay.
is an idea. An idea
exactly.
is the thing that threatens people the most. All right. So, what do you think of April 19th? What are your
An idea. An idea whose time has come.
Oh, even better. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I like that, Bianchi.
Yeah.
Yeah. And America are full of ideas. Let me tell you, this country is like so overwhelmed with ideas.
Mm-hmm.
It is awesome. We come up with so many ideas, and then China steals them all, of course. You know, we already know that.
But let's talk about political ideas. We have the ideas. See, Americans have – have you heard talk shows where people will call in and the host will say, that's a great idea, and now let's hear from Biff's Auto Sales. Hey, take it away, Biff. You know, and they totally dismiss the idea. It's gone. And I wanted to have a show where we don't dismiss the idea, where we work with it, where if necessary or if practical or if logical, we turn it into legislation and we maintain the idea. That's what this show is all about. That's why we're going to be successful.
And about the guns we should start impeaching a lot of these losers in government because they're violating our right to
mm-hmm.
own our guns. We have our Second Amendment, and our amendment is not changing. And they're not going to change it, and we're not surrendering either.
Yeah,
so
but part of it is celebrating this day. I mean, have you seen anywhere on media that this is Patriots Day?
No. Well,
I mean, I'm the only one? That's scary.
You're the only one.
Yeah.
You're the only station. Yeah.
Okay, folks, share the show. Spread the word. We're it. If you want to know, if you want to be on the cutting edge of the future, this is it. Everybody else talks about what has happened. We talk about what can happen. Listen to my promos.
Yes.
Let me just make sure I get your thoughts, and then I want to talk about this article. History of April 19th, Oklahoma City, Waco, Warsaw, and Concord. This is kind of fun. This is from Freedom Pre-Republic, so I want to get into this in just a second. Josie, did you have another comment?
No.
Okay.
I'm cooking Bianchi... some Cuban chicken and rice this morning.
Oh,
Cuban stuff.
Yeah, I love that stuff.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I remember when you dropped over to WBY with some was that Cuban chicken? It was great. Josie and I are sort of in the same neighborhood here.
Cuban.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Bianchi, we got to get you down here too. We all have to meet. You know, I want to meet at next year's CPAC if we can. And so we need to get together. We need to all meet. At least once a year, we should all get together. Reporters, callers,
everybody.
We should
have a reunion. Action Radio people meet.
Exactly. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I want to have our own conventions. I want to have our own citizen legislator conventions. But that would require a little bit of backing from our local community here. which I know is all going to come knocking on my door as soon as we hit that first million listeners. They'll all be here, and I'll say, guess what? Where were you when I needed you in the beginning? Anyway, history of April 19th, Oklahoma City, Waco, Warsaw, and Concord from Free Republic. This one's actually been around for a bit. This is April 18th, so this was the day before 2002, so the day before April 19th, 2002. April 19th is just around the corner. Are you ready? The 19th day of April has very special meanings for all Americans and all Jews. April 19th is a crossroads in history. So I'm going to take this. I'm going to make the screen a little bit narrower so I can read it. So just bear with me a second. Narrow, 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 narrow. Oh, that's better. Okay, good. Don't mind me. It's live radio. All right. April 19th is a crossroads in history. Let me start there again. Where suffering and sacrifice, patriotism and tyranny, liberty and slavery, religious persecution and bigotry all intersect again and again. For citizens of Massachusetts, April 19th marks Patriots Day, and for all Americans, the date of the shot heard around the world, when colonial militias defied orders to surrender their guns and routed King George's redcoats. For Jews, April 19th is the day Nazis, stormtroopers, surrounded the Warsaw Ghetto, sparking a revolt led by a few young Jews who refused to be enslaved or incinerated. For modern American patriots, April 19th marks the day 76 members of a religious minority died in the assault by federal paramilitary forces, aided and advised by regular military units. For the people of Oklahoma City, April 19th marks the day 168 people died in an explosion at the Murrah Federal Building. Okay. April 19th, 1775, the shot heard around the world. The battles at Lexington Green and Concord Bridge. Warned by Paul Revere, William Dawes, and Samuel Prescott, the Massachusetts militia mobilized to block a larger, better-trained British force coming to seize militia weapons at Concord. At Lexington, Major John Pitcairn, leading a detachment of Royal Marines, told the colonists there, "Disperse, you rebels, damn you. Throw down your arms and disperse." Nobody knows who fired the first shot at Lexington Green, but the colonial militia refused confiscation of their guns, and the British drove them back in the initial encounter. After regrouping, the colonial militia did better, turning back the British at Concord Bridge and forcing a disorderly British flight back to Boston. The road back became a deadly gauntlet as farmers from every Middlesex village and farm sniped from behind stone walls, trees, barns, houses, all the way back to Charleston Peninsula. By nightfall, the British survivors were safe under the protection of the Royal Navy and the British Army at Boston, having lost 273 men that day, while the Americans lost 95. The following year, the colonial Americans declared independence, a date now marked as July 4th, a national holiday. Months after participating in the actions at Lexington and Concord, a former slave, a black African named Salem Prince, was introduced to General George Washington as the sharpshooter who killed Major Pitcairn at Bunker Hill. And it was June 1775, so just, you know, a couple months later. April 19th is celebrated as a holiday only in Massachusetts. That is ridiculous. This should be a national holiday.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Hmm. It's a good article. I'll post it. Actually, I'll have to ask one of you two to post it for me. I'm still a political prisoner of Facebook. I like saying that now that you told me. That's pretty cool. Let me get
that
to the next one.
That is funny.
Yeah. Hey, if it catches on, you know, we'll get there. Yeah, I only got 2 minutes left. I can't believe that. Go ahead.
When you talk to Cuban people, they always say political prisoner. Oh, I'm a political prisoner. It's kind of like so many people in Miami that I grew up with, you know. Political prisoner.
Oh, yeah. They don't know what
just
being a political prisoner
out,
is. Yeah.
One of my cousins married this Cuban man that all his teeth were broken in the front by punching him, mm-hmm. and then hitting him with a baseball bat and put him in prison because he was against the government. And you cannot speak out against the government at all. So he was in prison for over 10 years.
Yeah.
His teeth are gone. And it's just nightmare. He still has nightmares.
Yeah, I don't have time to finish this article, but I'm going to finish it tomorrow because this is so good, and I want to get this, you know, basically on the podcast record. The next one, here's what else happened. April 19th, 1943, the Warsaw Ghetto Revolt, and they have another paragraph on that. April 19th, 1993, massacre of the Branch Davidians in their community at Waco, Texas. April 19th, 1995, Oklahoma City, that was the Murrah Federal Building. Here's one I'd forgotten. April 19th, 2000, actually I can't get this one in. Miami, the Elian Gonzalez standoff, as the case of six-year-old mm-hmm. Cuban refugee Elian Gonzalez hurdles to a confrontation between Janet Reno and the boy's Miami relatives. News reports speculate that Reno will not send U.S. Marshals to remove Elian tomorrow. That was April 19th. This is on the 18th, right?
Yeah.
It was written on the 18th in 2000. Yeah. The dark legacy of the Waco incident hangs heavily over the Clinton administration and Janet Reno's Department of Justice. Members of the Cuban-American community in Miami have vowed to resist any attempt to physically remove Elian from his Miami relatives. Marshals ready if needed for Elian. And this is what happened. But we know what
yeah.
happened, right? The stormtroopers showed up.
Yeah.
I've still got the picture. I actually cut out the newspaper article just so I wanted to save it for history. But it's available.
The sad part, Greg, is a lot of Cuban people were against all of us. And we were very upset. You betraying the hand that feeds you. That's what we were telling him. But God bless you. I'll see you tomorrow.
God bless you, too. Yeah, we're done for today, but I'm going to pick this up tomorrow. I want to continue this April 19th because it is such a fascinating day. Careful today. Watch out today. See what happens today. And join Frank's Speech, you know, Mike Lindell's new new social media YouTube combination. Greg Penglis for Action Radio. This is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. I'll be back tomorrow at 7.